Hey guys, welcome to Stock Talk. As always, it's Trevor Kirkpatrick. Corey is back this time. How have you been, my buddy?
I have been well. I just, you know, with everything that happened with the fam damily, kind of put some stress on things, but for those that are interested to hear, Mama Edge is doing better. She had a great appointment with her doctor last week. Things came back clear. He gave her 6 to 8 weeks to heal up. So we're good, but we got a lot going on. So unfortunately, you're not probably going to see my face in Louisville this week if you are there and listening either on your way there or way back. But things are going well. I was in Sedalia, Missouri for the Midwest Stud Ram sale last week, and what an environment that was this year.
Yeah. Well, we're happy to hear that Mama E, I told everybody in the last episode that she is a tough woman and she's a fighter. So although she may be sore, I'm sure she's going to kick it in the ass and get right back up on her feet. So that's good to hear. Glad the doctors are in tune also.
Yeah. You know, it's just crazy. It could be so much worse. And like anything that, you know, we experience in our industry, it's nice to know that you have a support system behind you. And I can't tell you how many friends that I had in the livestock industry that reached out via text and phone call and social media and other outlets. I mean, it really kind of humbles you a little bit to realize that maybe you just aren't as cool as you think you are, and people really do think about you, you know?
Oh, that's, I mean, when you called me, I was ready to jump to right to Indiana. I mean, it's kind of the family deal. When somebody's down, you help them back up. So glad to hear there's good news in Mama E's world.
Yes.
Well,
now folks, some more positive news.
Yeah.
Well, it was positive news, but
yes, yeah. It's good news. We wish the best to Mama E. So Stock Talk Nation, hit her up, tell her you love her. She's a good woman. We are here in Louisville, Kentucky. It's Wednesday. It's July 3rd, the day before Independence Day. What better way to do it at a pig show? Those of you who aren't in the pig industry, still hit us up. This has been a really fun journey. We're going to get a bunch of content here this week. We've already got a couple episodes recorded, so even more content headed your way. So we are here in Louisville, Kentucky. Those of you who are here or on your way, find us at the Walton Webcasting Mobile Studio booth. I believe we'll be in the West Wing. We are in the West Wing, if I get my directions right or my words together. So we have merchandise for sale, just like we did at the exposition. Plus, we have a brand new product, Corey.
Yes, we do. Matter of fact, we tried this out for the first time at the World Pork Expo and have used it since. And though we are not doing a full-blown ad read for these guys, you got to know what it is.
Yes, this product is called Top Shelf. It is the best skin and hair conditioner that I've used, and I've used a ton on my hogs. It's light. It's not the heavy oil dripping off of them. It's a very good conditioner. So just a little taste. We are not going to go in depth yet, but if you are on your way or already at Louisville, find me at the booth and get that in your hands. If you are not in Louisville and can't make it, go to www.stocktalk-podcast.com and order some of that stuff. It is worth it.
Oh, so fun to have a website now.
Oh, I know. We're big time, I think.
And if we're not, we're damn sure trying hard.
Yeah, yeah. At least it looks cool.
Yeah, right. I mean, you can get merch. You can get Show Pig Supply now. One Show Pig Supply.
Yeah.
It's okay. It's building. We got some more stuff coming up. And if you aren't aware of some probiotic things that maybe you want to try, or maybe it's a shampoo, you know, there might be some things coming down.
Oh, right. I'm pumped about that. We're going to work out these kinks on these brand new products we're coming out with. See, Corey, we're not the ones to jump on bandwagons that have been rode for a while. Although there's a bunch of good products out there, we're finding the brand new stuff that's not really public yet. And we're riding the coattails of them because it is the next best thing. So we have products that are coming out as top shelf, but there's a couple others we're working with right now that we are going to share to the public that if they don't have it in their barns and their show box, they're missing out.
Lots of research has been done on all these products. I mean, you know, maybe we look stupid if they don't work in the long run, but it's worth giving these guys a shot because they are just as passionate about it as you and I. And I don't think anybody in this industry would just bring a product to the market if it wasn't worth it.
No, and heavily researched. I think yes. This is not just some Jimmy in his garage trying to figure out how to feed animals. This has been heavily researched and tested. And I can't wait to share what exactly it is, but we're going to hold off. But Stock Talk Nation, make sure you're tuning in to some of our social media and future episodes because we have some products coming out that we are going to, I'll say, partner with some of the guys who are making it and developing it and testing it. And big stuff coming.
Yes, very, very much so. But Trevor, I would like to take a moment for all of us to realize that if it wasn't for July 4th, 1776, when the Continental Congress declared that the 13 American colonies were no longer subject to monarch of Britain, we wouldn't have this industry.
That's right. You're exactly right.
When we went down and we shot up and kicked ass and sent the red tails crying back home over the ship and through the sea. I mean, could you imagine being a Brit that just got your ass whipped going back home? I mean, it'd be like taking a good show bear that just got third in class and you were expecting to win the deal.
Yeah, or a calf you've been winning with the entire circuit and it gets the gate and you're like, mur, mur, mur.
Yeah. So, folks, remember the reason that we have all the opportunities we do. I mean, we talk about there's several other holidays that we do to celebrate our American freedom and the people that fight for it. But if it wasn't for that day on July 4th, 1776, we wouldn't even have this great nation we call the U.S. of A.
That's right. And when you sit down, if you're watching the fireworks thunder over Louisville or the red, white, and blue fireworks anywhere across the nation, just remember, we don't do that just because it looks cool. We do it for a really good reason. And our historian, Corey Edge, has given you the details of why you need to remember.
Yeah. John Hancock did not sign the Declaration of Independence for you to be able to just sit around all hunky-dory and enjoy your chili dogs and Diet Coke on a random Thursday night. No. He signed it so that you could be a free person from the Redcoats.
You know, I'm sitting here thinking, if I was Johnny H., and I'm sitting there signing that, he probably didn't understand the impact he's going to have on the country, nor the soldiers fighting. Yeah. Like, that's monumental stuff right there.
I agree. And he probably also didn't realize that when somebody asks for signatures in, like, the 2000s, like, hey, can I get your John Hancock right here?
You mean Herbie Hancock?
Yes.
Tommy Boy reference.
Tommy Boy reference. Hey, Trev, I kind of want to – is it appropriate to give a shout-out to the next podcast that has entered the livestock business?
You know, I think it is. There's been some funny text messages and messages in general that I've gotten in personal messages, I guess.
Yeah.
Oh, you got your competitor out there. Da, 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 da. Oh, boy, there's another one. Welcome to the team, man. I think this is good stuff.
Absolutely. I mean, we didn't do this thing just to be the best or whatever. I mean, yeah, we were first to the market, but we opened up, you know, I think a door for more conversation to be had. And so if folks haven't heard of this before, you better still listen to us. But you can go check out Shootside. Yeah, there's It's a cool podcast specifically for cattle. So pretty cool. I mean, I some people were like, oh, are you scared or are you nervous or whatever? I'm like, no, not really. I mean, we've got our niche.
We're always going to be the first. I mean, there's nothing going to change that. Right. But here's the thing. Folks aren't going to just listen to one podcast and that's it. Like, heck, I listen to four.
Yeah.
You know, it's like,
yeah, exactly.
There's got to be more than just one. We knew there was going to be another one to come, rather who it was or when it was going to happen. We're still going to do our normal things that people enjoy. And I'm super pumped that there's another podcast in the show Livestock Industry. I think it's awesome.
Right. So, Mr. Fair Simon, if you are listening to this episode by any chance, we're happy for you. Reach out to us if you have any questions. Trevor and I have done a lot of research on what goes into podcasts. So happy to help and glad to have another podcast in the industry that's going to discuss things that Trevor and I probably wouldn't discuss because we're not super cattle oriented, but we're going to get some cattle episodes too.
Yeah. So. And maybe if you are listening, we want you on, man. Jump on and, since you know the podcast deal, you understand how it goes. So it'll be really easy to do. But we want to know where you're going with this deal. And I am just excited about that podcast as I am our own. So awesome things happening in our industry. Man, who would have thought, Corey? Who would have thought?
Yeah. I mean, six months in, and there's now two livestock-oriented podcasts in the industry.
How about that? Speaking of innovation, Corey. Our guest on this episode is probably the best at taking initiative at brand new ideas, marketing, and not only that, multiple champions per year.
Oh, Malaita. I mean, this is just a heater of an episode. I mean, when we had the opportunity to bring this guest into the Walton Webcasting Studio, it just got, you know, it. When you just feel something in the air, that's what I felt when he walked in the door. I was like, we are getting ready to record something special.
Yeah. Now, those listening, don't get confused. Currently, while we're recording this episode, this intro right now, we are in Louisville. However, we are still pulling in content from the exposition. We have a bunch that we want to get out there, and it takes more than just a couple weeks to do that. And since we're only one episode a week, you're going to get a little bit, we're posting an exposition episode during Louisville. We're in Louisville. Don't get confused here. We're still not sitting in Des Moines.
That would be a long hiatus in Des Moines, Iowa.
Yeah,
we were.
Yeah. So, but this guy, people know in the hog world as Jesse Heimer. He tells a little bit of a backstory before we get started that I had no idea.
Yeah.
That he was not always Heimer Hampshire's.
Correct. Correct. So,
interesting content there. We do a very cool spin on Mount Rushmore, which is a very American thing to do here on July 3rd.
Yeah. How fitting. We didn't even know this was going to air this week.
Yeah. How about that? So, man, this is awesome. I am pumped for you guys to hear it. Also, if you're around the barn, stop by the Walton Webcasting Mobile Studio at the Stock Talk booth, get your merch, grab a couple gallons of top shelf, and have a great, safe July 4th, folks.
Yes.
Without further ado, here is Mr. Jesse Heimer. Corey, we're still here in the exposition in Des Moines, Iowa.
Sure are, sitting in the Walton Webcasting Mobile Studio.
That's right. I think my lungs are halfway full of dust.
Yeah.
But, you know, that is what it is. You got to expect that when you're here. So extremely thankful for our friends at Walton Webcasting doing next generation things with the technology that they're bringing to the public as far as graphics and the way that they're making UC livestock like nobody's ever seen the way that they're doing it. So make sure you go to waltonwebcasting.com and subscribe so you can go in and watch your game film from any show you've been to. Excellent stuff there. And they got Stock Center TV where you can go and watch some really fun stuff with On the Road with Greg. And you've heard us many, many times before say about it. Just go do it.
Yeah. Quick plug here for our exposition sponsor, Lean Value Sires, 15% off if you call in and mention Stock Talk of your next order. And you got to have those in before August 1st. So
that's right. Use promo code Stock Talk. Well, folks, we've got another big industry leader that was on our list. We finally had the chance to get in here at the Walton Webcasting Mobile Studio. Mr. Jesse Heimer sitting across from us. Jesse, thanks for coming in. You were here a couple, would have been a couple weeks for our listeners, but a couple days ago for us, recording about the Voices Heard deal, which I think is an incredible next generation, really, really good thing for people to understand why we do what we're doing. But we just want to kind of hear more about Jesse yourself, and instead of everything else that we've been recording. So give us a little backstory about how you came about within the show pig industry and kind of where you're going from here.
Good morning, guys. Thanks for the opportunity to be here. It's always fun to be in Des Moines for the week, and certainly have enjoyed the opportunity to talk to you guys on a couple occasions.
Yeah.
I want to tell you, first of all, that it's made for great listening while you're notching pigs late at night.
That's good.
It's nice to flip over from music and hear something important. So appreciate what you're doing and admire your effort. I grew up in Taylor, Missouri. Grew up on a very traditional family farm for the times. Dad raised commercial hogs, had 150 sows, farmed 500 or 600 acres of corn and soybeans, and grew up in that environment. Dad barely survived the 80s. didn't see the forecast for the 90s much better for our family. Made the decision to exit row crop farming. He downsized the sow herd and took a job in town and started an accounting practice.
Okay.
And his accounting efforts at the time focused on farmers and farm families at a time when computerized farm records were relatively new.
Mm-hmm.
And as he started that and phased out the sow herd, I was certainly at an age that I was more interested in raising pigs. So we kept enough pigs around for my siblings and I to show pigs, raise pigs, and have that experience growing up through high school.
Mm-hmm.
By the time I was in high school, the sow herd was mostly purebreds, Landrace, Yorkshire, Hampshire, a few crossbreds. Back then, we were known as Show Me Genetics.
Sure.
might be a good trivia question.
But, there you go.
Show Me Genetics was the brand back then. SMG was the herd mark. And that basically lasted through high school and college. So I graduated college in 2003.
From?
Culver-Stockton College.
Okay.
It's a private four-year liberal arts college just north of the farm, about 20 miles.
Gotcha.
And, I mean, I'm not embarrassed to tell you that the primary reason for attending that school was I didn't want to give up my pigs.
Yeah.
I mean, I should have sold my sows. one of my probably only regrets in life was not selling my sows, attending a, land-grant university, studying agriculture, expanding my network in that effort, and judging livestock. I didn't do either one.
Mm.
I served as a state FFA officer my freshman year, and that was a big driver in staying in-state, number one, and staying close to my district that I served, number two. So I was able to serve my district in my FFA capacity and keep my sows at the same time. And, looking back, the opportunities that I was afforded in the swine industry laid a lot of groundwork for what we do today. And that's certainly easy to see, but it wasn't the same college experience as many of my peers.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm sure you split the school work and sow work, farm work, just down the middle. Not many kids can say that they also did the same. So I don't think you have to go to a four-year Big 10, Big 12, SEC school just to get a good education. I mean, sounds like it's more hand-on education than anything.
That's right. PhD in life.
It was
more experience-based,
we'll say. Yeah,
yeah. But I did spend more time at the farm than I did in school, certainly. But when 2003 rolled around, the irony is I went close to school,
mm-hmm.
went close to home because I didn't want to sell my sows. But by the time I was done with college, I was so burned out that I was ready to exit. So I sold all the sows in 2003. June of 2003, we had a dispersal, sold everything. And in August of that fall, I took a job with High Point Genetics.
Okay.
And that was a continuation of a long relationship with Brent Bolin, the crew at High Point.
Mm-hmm.
I would consider Brent a mentor and someone that I traveled a lot of miles with Brent over the years and spent a lot of time in that breeding program, understood the sow herd, understood the boar stud, and was convinced that I wanted to experience that as a career. Mm-hmm. And I went there Embarrassed to say that I lasted 8 months in a semen selling role, sitting in the cubicle answering the phone. I admire the guys that can do that day in and day out. I didn't last very long in Crispin, Illinois, but I was there for a while. And then after I left High Point, I was sort of kind of a gypsy for a couple of years. I bounced around. I spent some time in Florida doing some interesting work down there. Came back and worked for a grass-fed meat company that did internet retail direct to the consumer, and learned a lot about the internet business, marketing, internet marketing, and that was a springboard into what you know what's very common today with marketing online.
Right.
So I did that. And in the fall of, or the summer of 2006, I started to get the itch again. I started to pay attention to what was going on in the swine industry, started to pay attention with, you know, genetics and who was doing what, and got the itch. I went to the Indiana State Fair in the summer of 2006. I bought four Hampshires and one crossbred at the Indiana State Fair, and went home with those. Labor Day weekend, I bought some more crossbreds when I was in Oklahoma. I was doing auctions for liveauctions.tv at the time. I was running the computer at cattle sales around the country, and came home with some more gilts. And so that first crop at the beginning of 2007 was basically the start. So from 2006 until today, 2019, that's essentially Hymer Hampshires as we know it.
Okay.
The other side of the trivia question most people wouldn't know is that when my dad's grandfather passed away and left some inheritance for all of his grandkids, Dad took that money and bought purebred Hampshires for my siblings and I from Danny Lewis and Don and Dennis Willard in Illinois.
Okay.
Yep.
And those Hampshires served as the basis for our 4-H project back then. And this was when he raised hogs commercially. I forgot that part earlier. We had a handful of Hampshire sows, and we were known as Hymer Hampshires in that effort. And that effectively was the beginning of HH, that herd mark, that brand, that name, established somewhere around 1988 with that.
Okay.
Sort of abandoned that when I was doing things on my own in high school and ran under the Show Me Genetics herd mark.
Why Show Me, by the way?
Why Show Me? Well, it's the Show Me State.
Okay. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. More trivia.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Corey, we're going to interrupt these guys real quick.
Yeah. Pause. Sit down just for a second. Take the earplugs out of your ears. Get some Q-tips because you're going to want to listen to this.
We have uncut, uncensored, raw material that is absolutely hilarious and or very serious, very personal episodes on a brand new platform.
Yes, Patreon.
The Patreon. However, you cannot find this on your normal Wednesday routine. It's not on Spotify. It is not on Google Play or Apple Podcasts or Stitcher. It is on the Patreon website. So find our social media platforms, and we'll probably have a bunch of links. I already posted a couple of them, and search Stock Talk once you get to the Patreon website. These episodes are what you guys have been dying to hear. We're going to always have our Wednesday episodes like you're normally going to hear it, but these episodes are down to the nitty gritty. They're stuff that we don't want public. All you have to do is pay a monthly fee, and you are going to get free merchandise.
Merch.
Plus bonus episodes. How about
bonus episodes? And maybe even a personal letter from Trevor and I.
Always. Every single one of them gets a personal letter. So,
Patreon.com. PATREON.com. Go there. Sign up. Look for Stock Talk Podcast. Thank you.
Back to the episode. I remember who it was, but I'll leave your name out of it. We'll talk after air. But I was judging a show out east, and they said, you know, I do a lot of business with Hymer, and, you know, they're really good to text back, Carl and Jesse both. But I tell you what, whoever the girl is in the office, she's the one asking me if I need semen.
That's Kathy.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So that relationship started in 2007. So when they came that spring to buy that pig, that was the beginning of a long-standing relationship with her. And we spat and argue and debate on a daily basis, but that's what makes our relationship good.
So, that's right.
Yeah, I don't think you progress if you don't do that.
Right.
So one of the coolest things I think about what we do on the show is we get to kind of hear not only the history of some people, but also kind of who their biggest influencers were. And obviously it sounds like your dad was probably one of those people. But throughout the course of time, you know, since you gathered up that first group of guilds, who's kind of been the people that you've kind of relied on and had, you know, in your corner and helped you along the way?
I tell people all the time that I learned how to raise pigs from my dad, and I really learned from doing. I mean, I followed him around on the farm. I can remember running the PTO button on the tractor before school to fill feed sacks in the nursery. I learned a whole new language loading fat hogs that you know needed to go to IBP that day at Beardstown or wherever it was. And so I learned how to raise pigs from my dad.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, when Dad started his accounting business, he was busy. He was very busy, and the farm didn't, you know, wasn't his number one priority at the time. And I spent a lot of time with a man named John Dravis. John Dravis was also a commercial hog guy there in our county, but ran a large number of landrace sows.
Okay.
And at the time, the landrace breed was in a very different position than it is today, as mm-hmm. we know it.
Mm-hmm.
He was buying a lot of the best genetics from Cedar Ridge at the time and J.R. Walker in Iowa, and was doing a phenomenal job of combining those two. He also bought crossbreds from Bill Range back in the day when it was Euroswine.
Okay.
And bought a Pietrain crossbore and really was a master at combining those landrace genetics with the Pietrain influence.
Oh, wow.
And made incredible show pigs for the time. I mean, they were, you know, 4-H club pigs back then. But John had two daughters. He didn't have a son. And he treated me like one.
Uh-huh.
And I spent an incredible amount of time with John. He took me to the World Pork Expo. I can remember driving to Des Moines, Iowa in the backseat of his car. He took me to Indianapolis to the Pork Expo when it was in Indy. I can still remember being amazed that Gunlands had a double-decker trailer that they backed up to the deck, the upper deck at Indiana to unload their pigs. I mean, that was, you know, who does that?
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
So I can remember some of those things, but John, he helped me write my first speech. He was the ringleader when we had a caravan of trailers going to the state fair. You know, he was real big on group efforts and mm-hmm. teamwork and, you know, let's all do it together. And that was all John. And I learned so much from him about raising pigs. My very, very first gilt that I got to call mine was a landrace bred gilt that he brought me on my birthday. I'll remember the day that he drove up the hill to unload her. I mean, I had no idea. He surprised me. I would get off the bus after school. I'd go straight to the fairing house. There was a phone in the fairing house, and that's where I'd call John from.
Yeah.
And we'd talk about pigs all the time. In December of 94, John took his life.
Mm.
And it was one of the worst days of my life, for sure. But, you know, he left a legacy and taught me so many things that are still applicable today in what I do with Heimer Hampshires and the way we treat our customers and the things that we're passionate about. A lot of that passion still comes from John his influence on me. So of all the influencers, John still holds the biggest piece of my heart,
mm-hmm.
to be honest.
Yeah.
Beyond him, though, and you know, I already mentioned Brent, and I mentioned my dad. There's a countless number of breeders that were always willing to answer questions.
Yeah,
that were always willing to take time to explain this or that. I was always inquisitive and always pretty curious. You know, Brent likes to tell the story that I was that little nagging pest at Sweetwater, Texas, when I met him that, you know, just wouldn't shut up.
Yeah,
you know, why won't this kid go away? Does he ever stop asking questions?
Yeah,
and that was me then. As I got older, it was less asking and more observing.
Yeah.
And I tended to watch and learn from those that were successful, not just in the swine industry. I really enjoyed watching folks in the cattle industry that were trendsetters, that mm-hmm. approached marketing differently, that approached genetics differently, that approached customer service differently. And, you know, taking something from here and there was a big part of how we started and how we still operate today. I'm a big believer that you know, there is no such thing as an original idea. There really isn't. And, you know, a lot of people want to take credit for something that probably originated somewhere else.
Yeah.
And so, you know, a lot of what I believe and do today was, you know, a piece from here and a piece from there. And, you know, I like to give credit where credit was due. I mean, there's a lot of people that came before me that were very good and very progressive and certainly paved the path for those of us today that can operate the way we do.
Yeah. Well, that's funny. I mean, one of the things I wanted to bring up, and it kind of segues, is like the first thing I was going to ask you, which I guess doesn't make sense now, but I was going to say you originated the pig in motion pictures to promote the class winners. When I think of everybody's doing it now.
Oh, yeah.
But that you were one of the first, I think it was like a couple expos ago,
that those were your promotions instead of the backdrop pictures, and they were way wicked cool. And then now, I mean, when we watch Walton Webcasting and you pop up there in the corner, your HH is right beside that pig in motion. So I think, you know, I was going to say you originated that, but I guess that's a cuss word to you now. but no, I think what I wanted to get into was, when I think of somebody who is very unique in the way they market their firm, rather it be their livestock in general or the boars they promote or even their baby pigs, all the pictures are very, very good and high quality, but yet everybody knows what HH is. And you can take this however you want it, but how did you get to have that brand marketing and or brand recognition, I guess? And then was there really, really deep thought behind it? Or was it like, you know what, that's what I liked, and everybody just kind of captured it?
It's a great question, and it's something I think about all the time. You know, when you're younger, and I guess as you age, you start to realize that it just, you know, things happen. It takes time. It's a process. I was always one of those that wanted everything right now. You know, I wanted things to happen right now. You know, if the age limit was, you know, you couldn't do this until you're 30, I wanted to try and do it when I was 28.
Yeah.
You know, Ronald Reagan said that age is not an indicator of ability.
Uh-huh.
You know, that's the old guy talking. You
right.
know, just because I'm old doesn't mean I don't have ability.
Right.
Well, yeah. It applies to your younger self, too. Mm-hmm. Just because you're younger doesn't mean you don't have the same ability. Man, I might not have the experience, but that doesn't tie the two together. But when I was younger, you know, you just want everything to happen right now. And you can see it, and you can picture what you want your endpoint to look like. But really, the beauty is in the process of getting there.
Yeah.
And, you know, I tell people all the time, there was never a master plan for HH to look or feel or even be what it is today.
Uh-huh.
In fact, when I graduated college in 2003 and exited the pig business altogether, I didn't have one person. And I want to say that again. Not one person was encouraging me to get in the hog business in any capacity. Go do something else. You've got too much talent. Go do this. Go do that. You know, go spend your time on this or that or this cause, or take a corporate job. Go work for, you know, go get a job. Go do this or that. They're, you know, we don't need you here. This isn't for you. Whatever. I mean, I heard it all. And, you know, looking back, it's amazing that to what we have today for an industry, it's amazing to see where we've come.
Mm-hmm.
Because at the time in 2003, there wasn't this sort of opportunity,
right?
There wasn't. So, you know, in college, I drew the HH in college. I had ideas of what it might look like when I got back out, and or when I got back in 2006 and started to work on branding. I had a pretty good idea of what I wanted to look like. We followed some of the principles that are pretty standard with marketing, but at the end of the day, I think branding has more to do with you as a person, your personality, your team, and what you accomplish. And I hope that people, when they see our logo and they see what they're doing, they know that we're bigger than the pig.
Yep.
And I think for me, you know, the pigs are great, and that's our focus every day, are the pigs.
Mm-hmm.
And if I ever lose that focus, a lot of this will fall apart, because the pigs are still what drives the bus. But if we didn't have the opportunity to work with some of the best kids and some of the best families and some of the best breeders and those opportunities that keep us motivated and very focused, the pigs wouldn't matter.
Right.
So, you know, from a branding perspective, we've tried to get behind causes that are industry movers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Voices Heard is another example of something that I'm passionate about, because I feel like it's very important for the future of what we're doing, mm-hmm. to keep this sustainable and keep this thriving. And, you know, so the branding part of it, it's probably been untraditional by comparison with what other folks do.
Mm-hmm.
But I hope people realize that it's still industry focused.
Oh,
I mean, what we've done with our videos, you know, that, just to tell you the quick story on that, the video started out as I committed to a 60-second commercial spot for Perfect Timing Pig Sale. Back at one of the very initial Walton webcasts of that pig sale in Oklahoma in the fall. Reached out to them. I got the parameters back. You know, here's what this 60-second commercial might look like. Here's what standard. Send us a few pictures. We'll put the slideshow together. You know, we'll create you a commercial and we'll run it. Perfect. The more I thought about it, the more I felt like that was just the the same traditional mundane way everybody else was doing it, and I wanted to do something different.
Mm-hmm.
Reached out to a friend, reached out to BJ Ike, and I said, hey, what can we do in 60 seconds that might be a little different from a commercial standpoint? He put his mind to it, put the pencil to paper, shot me back a couple ideas, a couple concepts, and a price tag, and literally fell out of my chair. Like, drop the phone, fall out of your chair, have a stroke. Unreal.
Yeah.
I mean, I had no expectation for that. And I had to take a deep breath, collect myself, and really look at it differently. And when I decided that the video approach was an investment in the future of the show pig industry, not an investment in my brand, not an investment in our pigs, and not a marketing effort to sell more pigs, but an investment in the future of our industry, it was an easy decision.
Yeah.
And so that first effort to create a 60-second commercial to promote my pigs turned into a 60-second, actually it was closer to a 90-second commercial called Endless, about a young man in California that was getting ready to graduate. And it was sort of a look back at what he had learned in the show ring, and a reminder of all those things that he had learned and just how endless the opportunities were for that young man that participated in the Junior Livestock Program. Mm-hmm. And that was the start of several videos that have been very well received, and it's honestly been one of the most rewarding things that I've ever done.
Oh, I think I was one of the first times I ever saw the video. I think the first person I sent it to was him, and I think it was on Facebook where I saw it. I remember exactly where I was. It was the most monumental thing I've seen in the industry, and it was like, I've got goosebumps right now. Never had a Heimer pig, unfortunately. But my God, I wish I had. You know, it's one of those deals where it's just like, holy moly, this is next level. And then you've had multiple after that that's just, gosh, there's Jesse again. Like, they're awesome.
Yeah, just like one of those things that just get you fired up. Mm-hmm. Like, regardless of where you're at, regardless of what story it is, whether it's something sentimental or emotional, or it's like, let's go win.
Mm-hmm.
Like, either way, it's just like, man, you get so passionate about the industry, and you're right, the forethought and the thinking behind, you know, not only are we telling the story of what really matters, and that's growing kids, but we're also telling the story of, hey, we can go out and kick butt and win, join the team, let's go play ball, that kind of thing.
Yep.
So I think that kind of stuff is what's so unique about the video aspect. And I know when Trevor and I went and did our commercial, ours is kind of stupid and silly, but people like it.
That's also our personality.
Yeah, right. So, but it has to represent who you are.
Yeah, right.
And, you know, again, back to branding, it has to represent who you are. And as long as you keep that at the core, I think you'll be on track.
Yeah. So we're going to jump into a segment here we call Topics from a Hat. And here this week at the Exposition, we've had one of our hats imported by our friends at Fierce Threads, who have just crushed it, I think, with everything they've done for us apparel wise and I know that you guys get quite a bit done with them as well, and so big thanks to our friends at Fierce Threads for sponsoring this particular segment, Topics from a Hat. So we got two I think we want to cover here that have been submitted, one kind of funny one, one that I'm really intrigued to hear the answer for. So we'll start with the funny one. Apparently there's a foot race between yourself and Justin Grinstead.
You're not talking about the boar?
No. Tell us the story about how that happened, who won,
and why.
And why
it happened.
Yeah.
Justin Grinstead's a great friend. He's a very fast, big man. And when old Red is confident, he's very confident. And he's also very fast when he's healthy. And for those that don't know, Justin was a highly recruited athlete. He had tons of potential, and injury kept him from playing football at a high level. And Justin was John last year, all week. And it finally got to the point one day, I said, you know what, big fella, if you want to race, let's just race. And out here on the street, between the cattle barn and the pig barn, we decided we were going to run. And he challenged me, and he wanted to set the parameters and wanted to run from one end of the pig barn to the other end of the pig barn. And I said, tell you what, I said, I'll race you. But I said, not unless we're going all the way to the building, the youth inn where the exchange was last night.
Yeah.
I said, we've got to run that far. come on, guys, the only way I had a chance is if I could outlast
it. Yeah, had a little distance.
So that's what we did. And believe it or not, we gathered quite a crowd. And there were a lot of dollars wagered.
Whoa.
And Justin was very confident. We took off. We had someone at the finish line, someone at the start line. We took off, and we were neck and neck from the starting point to the end of the hog barn. We were neck and neck, and let me tell you, he was talking trash the whole way. I mean, you know, when I'm running, I need to run.
Yeah.
Apparently, he's talented. He can talk and run at the same time. But he was talking to me, and we got to the end of the pig barn. What he failed to realize or calculate was that it started incline at the end of the pig barn. And when we started to go uphill, the big fella ran out of steam. And crash landing.
Uh-oh.
I don't know if you knew that or not, but Justin had a little stumble. I finished strong and won the race. Thank God Heidi Anderson at Legacy Imaging captured the moment at the finish line. It's a picturesque moment, let me tell you. And it was one of those things that when I got done, I'm like, why the heck did I do that? Because we were both pretty tired, banged up, sore. Grin said, I think, had more marks than I did because he didn't stay on his feet. But the story continued when I bought a Hampshire board from Mark Long and Ryan Bell that summer, well, last summer, and we decided to name him Foot Race. He was actually a board that Grin said and the folks at High Point were interested in, and we ended up with him and affectionately named him Foot Race.
Hilarious.
So that's the story.
Wonder what the over or under was. I'd love to know the odds.
There was no one betting on me. I'll just tell you, there wasn't anyone betting on me.
Holy crap, that's awesome. Well, I would like to see maybe an 8x10 printed and signed of the picture of the finish line. Maybe just give that to him as a present someday.
There you go.
Thought about doing that.
Yeah,
that'd
be nice.
Or maybe just the backdrop of the Boers. You know,
I gotta tell you, his daughter Riley was so mad. I mean, she was so mad. She was so mad that I kept running. I mean, why didn't I stop and help her dad get up?
Yeah.
So we like to laugh about that today, but
that is funny. All right. So second topic. This one's big, I think.
Yeah.
When I saw it, actually a good buddy of mine, actually one of the new NSR field staff.
Yep.
Luke Ziegler submitted this. And he did say Mount Rushmore of champions. I'm assuming that we can go multi-species with this, but I want to spin it because we have Jesse Heimer in the booth. Let's do a Mount Rushmore of Heimer champions since you got started.
How many is there? Four? There's four heads on the
There's four heads right? on Mount
okay.
Rushmore.
We'll do four.
We'll call it Mount Rushheimer.
Mount Rushheimer. I like that.
There we go.
I like that.
Put that in your next video.
Yeah. Whew. Four. Number one would be Shadow, the bear that won San Antonio last year. Yep. San Antonio was a show. I went to San Antonio as a sophomore in high school for the first time. And when I came home, I was convinced that if I would have been just a little younger, I could have talked my dad into moving so that we could show in Texas.
Wow. Yeah.
I was so blown away by the atmosphere, the competitive event, the sheer size and scope of a Texas major. And from that day forward, winning that show was the ultimate goal.
Mm-hmm.
And to win that show in the manner that pig won. Very, very rarely in this business is there any sort of consensus.
Yeah.
Ringside critics always have a different opinion, and right. it was just an amazing, surreal week. From the moment that pig hit the SIF pin to watch Justin Rodebaugh's reaction, I've got that video in my favorites on my phone, and every once in a while when I have a bad day, I like to watch that and remind myself that there are, you know, there are neat moments that can drive you. But, you know, Justin down to a Mountain Dew. The pig came in, he downed his Mountain Dew, looked at the pig one more time, sent him on through, and turned to Seth Swenson. And I asked him at the backdrop later that week, I said, Justin, what did you tell Seth? He said, I turned to Seth, and I said, the show's over.
Wow.
Keep in mind, that was on Monday.
In the SIF pen.
It was on Monday in the SIF pen. He had not seen him in the ring, and there were two more days of showing left. But that was an incredible pig from an incredible litter. Weston did an incredible job showing him.
For those who don't know, what's the little lineage behind that one?
So he was a Dirty Secret, and the mother was a verbatim Roxy. I bought Roxy here in the stands at Des Moines, Iowa at the World Pork Expo in 2014. The summer of 14 or the summer of 15? I think the summer. Well, it doesn't matter. She cost $40,000. That's what matters. She was expensive. I took her home. I had full intentions of breeding her to Swagger. The problem was when I got her home, I realized just how long-bodied she was, and I wasn't sure that Swagger was the right fit, so I bred her to Verbatim, which was the clone of the Reserve Dark Cross at San Antonio in 13.
Okay.
I bred her to Verbatim, the Swagger son, which he was a Verbatim. Verbatim was a Swagger Priority 1 Black Attack, and Roxy was a Tap That Black Attack. Uh-huh. So really that effort was lining up Black Attack, and I thought that was great.
Yep.
So I did that. Kept all the gilts. And actually, 225.6, she'll be lot one in our South Sale in June. There's my plug for our sale coming up. But she had a belly hernia. And any other scenario, I would never keep a gilt with a belly hernia. I mean, you'd get her gone as soon as you could.
Uh-huh.
But I was pretty convinced that it started from a navel sucker in her nursery pen. And when you've got $40,000 tied up in a sow in an investment,
yeah,
you want to have every opportunity to extract those dollars back. So right. We fixed her. And believe it or not, she fixed. You know, those are really hard things to fix, and she did. And she had a very good first litter, a very good second litter, and when she was bred to Dirty, it was just lights out. Reserve Grant at Fort Worth was out of that litter. Champion Cross Sparrow at Perry at the Southeast Regional was out of that litter.
Wow.
It was a phenomenal mating. But Shadow was heads and tails the best one, and he was an elite baby pig. And he was very good at every stage of his life, and it was so fun to watch him show in San Antonio.
I know we got three more to talk about, but I got one more question.
Yeah.
What made you take the nice to him if he was that good?
At the time I guess you gotta realize that the Dirty Secret thing was just in its infancy.
Yeah.
No one knew.
Yeah,
no,
I mean that was essentially the first crop. I mean, a Dirty Secret sired barrel won North American in November of that fall. I would have sold this litter the end of September. So, I mean, Dirty Secret hadn't won a show yet.
Right.
At that point, it was just starting to heat up. You know, when I saw Dirty Secret, I was very, very, very interested.
Uh-huh.
I was very impressed, and I was almost convinced that he was the answer to a lot of our sows. But in September in, you know, 2017, I wasn't sure of that yet.
Right.
I mean, we were still breeding sows to him at a pretty heavy rate, uh-huh. but I wasn't sure of that. So from a boar standpoint, really, when we got to the end of the show season in 2018, we only had a couple Dirty Secret sons.
Right.
We were pretty – I mean, the knife was sharp.
Yeah.
So and I guess to answer that point even further, at that time of the year when you've got a hungry customer base that wants to buy your best barrows.
You give them the best barrows.
You give them the best – you know, you make them available.
Especially if you're going to go try to win San Antonio.
Correct. Right. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Number two – I'm going to stay with the same show. The Reserve Grant at San Antonio in 2012 was a bear that I'll forever, ever be proud of. Mandy Stevenson showed him.
Okay.
Steve Rodabaugh and Brandon Ogle were the judges that year. He was sired by Swagger. His mother was a daughter of one of the bred sows that I bought from Frank Davis
The
year before that.
Uh-huh.
So that was the first sort of product of that purchase or that acquisition that we influenced. One of those sows was a Fatal Attraction daughter. She was one of the key pieces of that purchase. When we bought those sows, there were 31 total. There were 21 sows and 10 gilts. And then when Ryan Stolkus and I bought them, the way we split them up, I took two sows, he took two, I took two, he took two. Ryan yielded and gave me the right-of-way on the sows because it was my idea to go down there.
Yeah.
And then in turn, I gave him first pick on the gilts. So we went 1-1-1-1 on the gilts.
Okay.
And that's how we split them. And my two picks on the sows were the 26-2 Fatal sow and 38-4 Space Monkey. 26-2 Fatal was bred to Priceless, the top-selling boar at the Crossbred Classic the summer before. She was bred to Priceless, and that litter, I kept all the gilts. They were 42-litter sows, and I kept those. Do we have time to tell this whole story?
We have tons of time.
Okay. So 42-10 was a blue gilt that I leased to the Goss family in Oklahoma. She was great-haired. She was long-haired. She was shaggy. She was skinny, very immature, and never made a show gilt. About halfway through the growing period, Dana reached out, Dana Gosta, and she says, "Hey, you know, this isn't working out. Can we call her off?" And I says, "Whoa, you know, I got a lot of dollars invested in this. I've got to have everything back that I can. I want her back." So on a trip home from down south, we got the gilt back, brought her home, tried to be patient,
uh-huh.
fed her hard. You know, she was in with a group of gilts that we were going to breed, tried to stay patient, got to a point where I was discouraged with how she looked and decided I was going to haul her off. So she went on a cold truck with several other females that day, or odds and ends. And I was actually on my way to a meeting. I was representing Ozark Shavings at the time, and I had a meeting with Orsland Farm and Home at their corporate office to talk to their buyer. Unloaded that load at Heinhold at the buying station, went to my meeting. I'm in my meeting and literally broke out in a cold sweat, sitting there thinking about this guilt that, you know, I was so convinced that I needed her early that I wouldn't sell her.
Yeah.
I was so convinced that I needed her at her her middle point that I wouldn't let them ship her.
Uh-huh.
And why was I so willing to give up on her now when we were this close to breeding her? So I immediately excused myself from the meeting. I called Joe at Heinhold and I said, Joe, I said, have you loaded out that group that I dropped off this morning? He said, no, they're not set to leave till tonight. What's wrong? I said, man, Joe, I hate to do this to you, but is there any way I can get one of those gilts back? He said, yeah, that's fine. That's no problem. He said, tell me which one. Can I find her? And I said, yeah, I'm pretty sure she's the only blue bud on the load. I said, she's shaggy haired and she's skinny, probably weighs about 260. And I said, that's the one I need. He pulled her out, pinned her off, and I stopped by and picked her up and had to isolate her all over again.
Yeah.
Isolated her all over again, took her home, and bred her to Swagger, the boar that no one else wanted to use. Keep in mind that when we bought Swagger, he was a joke for a long time. I mean, he was a different-looking pig that struggled with health early on. I mean, mm-hmm. He went from place to place to place, from Texas to Indiana, from Indiana back to Missouri, from Missouri to Illinois, and by the time he got to High Point, there wasn't a lot of positive hype on Swagger. We'll just put it that way. So I bred this group of gilts to Swagger because I still felt like he had some value, and he was different enough, and I thought he'd work on this set of gilts. Well, then I got to the point where I needed to generate some cash, and so I decided in June that I needed to offer some of these gilts as breds and that it was a good idea to sort of sell some of these daughters of those Frank Davis sows and get some money recouped on my investment. So I offered, a handful of bred gilts and a couple bred sows, and we went about it. And no sale to about half of them.
Ooh.
One of them was 4210. 4210, no sale. 76.3, also no sale. 76.3 was the priority one Black Attack sow bred to Fatal. And in her litter, the champion Hampshire Barrett San Antonio in 2012 was out of that litter.
Somebody had the chance to buy it.
4210, the priceless Fatal sow, was bred to Swagger. She no-sailed. I farrowed her, and she had the 44 litter out of Swagger. That pig was a crip. He had a retained testicle. Sold him online. By the time we got that pig delivered to Todd Stevenson, he looked like death warmed over.
Mm-hmm.
Something was going on with that testicle in his stomach, and it wasn't allowing him to digest feed.
Yeah.
It just wasn't all working right. Todd got that pig. It didn't take long for Todd to give up on him. Threw him outside in the outside dirt pen. And for whatever reason, I mean, someone had a bigger plan than I did. That pig fought his pen mates for about 3 days. And whatever happened in that fighting somehow released whatever was going on in his gut. And he started eating feed.
Holy crap.
It started blooming up. And Todd went out there one day and was surprised. And was like, oh my gosh, I got to get this pig back in the barn. Pulled him back in, took him to Dr. Gleason in Texas, got him fixed. And the rest is history. He was reserve grand at San Antonio.
That's awesome.
Holy the chest shot of that pig will forever be the barometer, the standard for the chest and a show bearer that will always be in my head.
Yeah.
Hanging on the wall.
That's awesome.
It's the things that just happen in this deal.
See, if that one was the highest selling barrow and, online sale, took a great picture, went on to win, that ain't a story. It is, but, I mean, gosh, I love those back stories.
Holy crap.
All right, what's number three?
Number three is probably going to be the blue barrow that showed here in Des Moines a couple summers ago by Lane Render.
Uh-huh. This one's got a great story, I've heard.
But he was named Big Husky. Do you guys know why he was named Big Husky?
I do know the Husky story.
He was Big Husky because he spent his life, the majority of his life, eating out of a Big Husky feeder in the lot out back. True story. And when Big Husky was finally good enough to find the show barn and some shavings, they thought, we'll wash this pig up and take him to a jackpot show. And he won. Then they took him the next week, and then he won again. And by the time he came into Des Moines, I mean, he was on a hot streak,
yeah,
big-time hot streak. And when that blue one hit the ring, It was a proud moment. I mean, he was incredible.
Yeah.
Another one of those consensus picks.
Yeah. Yeah. It's fun. You know, it's winning's fun. Yeah. Winning's right. Hard, but it never gets old. And, you know, I say that a lot. It's extremely hard, but it never gets old. But when you can win with some consensus and you can win with respect from your peers and your biggest enemies and your yeah. biggest competitors, that's fun.
With the backstory that, hey, yeah, we didn't pimp on him the whole time. Yeah.
So that pig was out of dropping swag.
Okay.
And then yeah. the sow was a red bone sow that came from Kirk Swanson.
Wow.
And she was actually a gilt that I loaded up. She had a bad set of tits on one side of her underline that Kirk wasn't very fond of. And he looked at me one day when I was up there and he said, you know, he said, I don't really want to give her a chance, but I know you will. And he said, if you like her, why don't you just take her? And I did. And I bred her to drop and swag. And that's how that worked out. So, you know, another luckiest guy I know stories. That's probably number three. I feel inclined to finish with a purebred.
Okay.
We've had several Hampshires over the years that have been highly competitive. I feel like it's sort of a tie between the Hampshire Barrow that the Geyer family showed here. That was grand overall.
Oh, yeah.
He was grand overall Barrow that year. I can picture it like it was yesterday. He was a point-taking son. Willie Kirkpatrick judged.
Mm-hmm.
He called him a man among boys.
That was the monsoon storm we had.
Yeah, I believe that's that. We've told the story on here before. I remember watching ringside, like, and he got on the mic, and, you know, the big luscious beer got to flowing, and he said, boy, if all the rain started blowing sideways, it all land right in this bear's back. Yeah. I'm pretty sure that was the one he was talking about.
But the other Hampshire bear I want to mention was the bear that Claire McCormick showed at Denver. Big Bob Liston judged that year. And the funniest story about that pig, not that he was old, because he was, not that he was a purebred, because he was, but it was when he was in class that year. I believe there was only one class of Hampshires. And Bob judged him in class, and he got so wound up talking about the pig that he named him champion and forgot that he had to pick a reserve. Like, literally, talked about the pig, talked about how incredible he was, named him champion, put the mic down and walked over and was ready to start judging the next class. And everybody else was like, you know, Bob, what are you doing? You got to pick a reserve. And he said on the microphone in the grand drive, that's the first time in his judging career that he's ever got so excited that he forgot what he was doing.
That's
like,
insane.
Forgot what he was judging. But that's also the same judge that came up to me after the show, and he said, are you the idiot that cut that one? And I was. We actually cloned that pig and had a boar we called Superman. Claire named that bear Superman, and we named the clone Superman as well. But that was a really neat win. It was a neat win for Claire, and it was a neat win for Hampshires at the time.
Right.
And it was a neat win for us. So
yeah. Well, that's a heck of a – good job, Luke Ziegler. That was a heck of a topic. Folks, that was the longer version of Topics from a Hat, but probably one of the best ones we've ever had.
Absolutely. I agree. Let's just jump into another segment.
I'm in.
Because I'm interested to know, we'll just call this one Hampshires with Heimer, maybe?
Yeah.
I don't know. Hampshire Talk. Maybe we'll call it Hampshire Talk. You know, we had Corb on here, and... You know, he shared some of the ideas and exchanges that you guys had in the past, and maybe some ideas that were brought forth to the Hampshire Board when, you know, talk of changing how we're going to start identifying purebreds in the Hampshire business was going to go. And so maybe just kind of briefly share, you know, your thoughts and where we can go with the Hampshires to, you know, keep things on the up and up and positive and grow the breed, and where are you at there?
Hot button topics, fellas. I'll start by going back to my roots from a Hampshire standpoint. There's been Hampshires on the hill since the 50s. My grandfather, Bill Heimer, had 150-plus Hampshire sows when my dad was a kid. Unfortunately, my grandfather was killed in a farm accident. And after he died and passed away, they had to sell the Hampshire sows. And it was a long time before Hampshire showed back up, and that was in the 80s when we restarted for my siblings and I to show purebred Hampshires. But to say that Hampshires are in my blood would be an understatement.
Right.
I mean,
it's in the name.
Correct.
Yeah.
So I'm passionate about Hampshires, and I've always had a love affair with the breed, and it's always been very important to me. And having said that, I'm so discouraged. with where we're at today in our breed and the future of our breed. And I say that because I feel like we've continued as a breed to make decisions that have made it more exclusive to those that want to participate. The economics of this business are challenging today for anyone. No mm-hmm. matter what you're trying to do in the pig business, the economics don't allow for as much creativity as it used to. The market demands that you've got to raise something that someone wants to buy.
Right.
That's just the reality of raising livestock. And if we were to rely on the commercial industry to put a value on the pigs that we raise, we'd all go broke.
Yeah.
with the inputs that it takes to do what we do, we can't rely on the baseline of the commercial industry to survive economically. Right. So if we can't add value to the pigs we're raising, it doesn't make economic sense. And, you know, I would tell you from a Hampshire standpoint right now, it's very difficult to make any money raising Hampshires. And I'll debate that topic with anyone. By the time you take out the off belts, the short titted ones, and then take out the ones that don't have enough quality to compete in the show ring, you're not left with a lot of pigs that have resale value.
Right.
That's the truth.
Mm-hmm.
So we've continued to make decisions that make it more exclusive. And we've done that at a time when I feel like our entire show pig population is dominated by the belt.
Yeah.
I mean, the belt identity is really, and I've written about this. I mean, you ask a little kid what they want to show, and they're infatuated with the belt.
Mm-hmm.
People outside the realm of our industry, people outside of agriculture that are shopping for meat in the grocery store, they recognize the belt.
Right.
Yeah.
They recognize that. The belt is the identity that we have. And I've said several times, are we more interested in saving the breed or are we more interested in saving the belt? Because I feel like a lot of our policies have contradicted each other. You know, in an effort to create rules that make sure our pigs look like hamsters in the ring, we've eliminated lots and lots of genetics in the process. And now we're in this effort that we're more worried about making sure our animals are pure by composition. That hasn't done anything for our identity with regard to the belt.
Yep.
I watched a show yesterday, the Barra Show. We bred a class winner that was pretty loud marked. And I know there were some people around ringside that were critical of that.
Mm-hmm.
But his sire passed at 90%. His mother has, we haven't tested her, but her pigs have passed.
Yep.
And, you know, I don't understand if that's not acceptable, then what are, you know, what's more important? Again, are we more worried about the identity of what we're showing? Or are we more worried about what's running through their veins?
You're playing by the rules.
From a breed composition standpoint.
Yeah, right.
So the way I see it, if we want to be progressive and we want to do something that I feel like can help our population and that can encourage people to participate, we've got to find a way to maximize the value and maximize the utility of the belted sow population in our industry. Can you imagine the possibilities if we told everyone that has a belted sow that's tested, and we figure out what their composition is, that if this is the road we want to go down and we figure out what their composition is, what their red gene status is, and what their stress status is, and you clear those hurdles, and we take everyone that has a belted sow that wants to participate and give them an opportunity to make percentage Hampshires, what sort of opportunities we have?
Mm-hmm.
Look out.
What does everyone in the industry that has an Angus cow get to do?
Right.
Exactly. They get to breed them semi, Lemmy, Maine, Key, whatever routes you want to take, and the utility of those Angus cows is off the charts. Our population is full of belted sows that have incredible potential to allow people to add value to their show pigs. And I'll take it a step further. If we take that route, what does that do to the value of a Hampshire boar that's needed in that scenario?
Right.
Because I'll still argue and maintain that the reason we're in the position we're in today is because we lost the value of the Hampshire boar to the crossbred sire. The Hampshire boar lost. 15 years ago, when you wanted to make crossbred pigs and you had a crossbred sow, or a purebred sow for that matter, what boar did you use? You called for Hampshire semen.
Yep.
Yeah.
And we've lost the crossbred sire. And in my opinion, until we find a way to incentivize the use of Hampshires again, you can call it incentivize if you want. You can call it require, whatever word you want to use. But until we make it popular, and economically viable to use a Hampshire sire to make crossbred pigs, I feel like we're gonna be treading water for a long time.
Right.
Yeah. Crossbred's still driving the bus.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, we can sit here and
talk
about...
Which are mostly belted pigs, by the
correct.
Way.
Correct. Exactly. And, you know, I've been viewed as an extremist. I've been viewed as lots of things. I've been called lots of things. We had a Hampshire Forum a few years ago in Indianapolis at the Indian State Fair. And, you know, I listened to a lot of discussion for quite a while. And when I was finally encouraged to speak and given the microphone, it, you know, I didn't feel anything hit me. But it sure felt like somebody was throwing stuff at me. Because my ideas were viewed as pretty extreme and pretty far out there and pretty radical. And that's okay. I'm okay with that. But I'll maintain that if we're going to be progressive, and Hampshire breeders for all time have been the progressive folks. They've looked at things differently. Ask any of the old-time breeders, and they will tell you that Hampshire breeders were trendsetters. And I feel like if we're going to be progressive as a breed, we've got to find a way to add value to the belted sow population and find a way to encourage people to participate in what we're doing. That doesn't, and I am not advocating that we eliminate purebred Hampshires. Please right. don't misunderstand me. Because in an effort to utilize belted sows and in an effort to give belted pigs an identity, because right now we've got crossbreds and we've got Hampshires, and I'll argue that crossbred belted pigs in a lot of situations are more recognizable as Hampshires than they are purebreds. Mm-hmm. And I'll back up again. If we're going to give belted sows utility and add value and give those people an opportunity to participate in the Hampshire breed, we've got to have purebred Hampshire boars to make that happen.
Right, yep.
And if we believe in this breed composition technology that's going to put a percentage on where these boars are at, and if that's going to draw the line on what they need to be and can't be, then we've got the technology to move forward and do that.
Yep, absolutely.
But we have to be willing to create programs that add value to our pigs and that encourage participation.
Mm-hmm. In a lot of other instances, 7/8 is still a purebred.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. And I totally agreed with Corb in the fact that what's the significant difference in the genetic makeup of a hog that passes at 90% and one that passes at 87%.
I mean, I didn't get a genetics degree, and I can't speak to the way all the numbers work. I can just tell you that on our farm, on the limited amount of testing that we've done to see the difference between an 86 and a 90 or an 86 and a 92, it's laughable to think that folks can stand ringside and try to tell you which ones are purebred by test and which ones aren't.
Yeah.
Yep. It's crazy.
Yep. No, and everybody has a different opinion about it. But the thing is, everybody likes purebred animals. That's that hasn't went anywhere. It's just a matter of how to get there. So, this segment of Hampshires by Heimer has been pretty good. So, we're going to jump into a segment we use frequently amongst all of our episodes real quick. It's called Social Smash. For those of you just tuning in, this is a pet peeve of anything on social media or within the industry that we asked all of our guests. So, Jesse, what are some of your pet peeves, or maybe one of your biggest ones that we can throw into this segment?
A pet peeve about social media?
Yep.
This will be good.
It can be industry if you don't...
Wow, I wasn't prepared for this one. Wow. I'll just say in general, from a marketing standpoint, I think there's a fine line between not enough and too much.
Mm-hmm.
And in an era where we live by the minute and by the day, and you know, this is a what have you done lately business. And
right.
When I say lately, it's, you know, what did you do at the last show?
Yeah.
Kind of business. We get really caught up in wins and losses and results. And all too often, that's the only focus that we have in our industry. And I think anyone that's breeding livestock right now knows that it, you know, winning's not sustainable.
Mm-hmm.
And if your relationships are only based on wins and losses, it's going to be really difficult to sustain that. And so I just think as an industry, we've got to find ways to the focus more on the good.
Yeah.
And less on the bad. I don't know that I necessarily have a pet peeve on social media. I think everybody's got their own approach, and certainly everyone's approach fits their personality.
Right.
Yeah. Some folks are very vocal, and lots of folks aren't. But I think the interesting part about social media today is it's a platform
mm-hmm.
that's available to everyone. It's giving lots of folks an opportunity to say things that they wouldn't have said five years ago.
Conveniently hidden behind the computer.
Correct, yeah.
In some cases.
Yeah.
Yes.
All right, Corey, you can hit him with the last question.
Okay. We've talked about the past and what we've done currently, but we like to ask this question a lot is, where do you see the show stock industry in 5 years?
Whew.
I often get asked, where do I see the trends changing what's going to change with pigs? And I always think that's an interesting question because I don't feel like that's my job. Like, mm-hmm. I don't feel like that's something that we do. I don't feel like that's our intent with the way we try to breed our sows or anything that we're doing. We're not trying to be trendsetters intentionally. I tell people all the time that I want to raise pigs that people want to buy. And I want to raise the kind of pigs that I feel like will be competitive in the ring and that will be feedable and will fit all levels of competition. So our approach is to continue to raise pigs that will work for the times, that will be accepted by our customers, and certainly will be competitive. As an industry, I feel like we're at a very critical juncture with our relationship with our commercial counterparts. And again, not to talk about this too much, but the Voices Heard initiative again was an effort to earn their respect
mm-hmm.
and to really find out what we need to do as a show pig industry that's going to fit with their expectation for us as pork producers.
Yeah.
And so I feel like the show pig industry right now is we've got to make sure our voice is heard. We've got to make sure that we've got a seat at the table. We've got a very vibrant industry right now that is full of opportunities for everyone to participate.
Yeah.
And I'll argue that if you're a high school graduate, if you're a college graduate, if you're a career professional, if you're a retiree, any of those situations, if you want to raise pigs, what other avenue is there outside of show pig production to raise pigs and do it economically?
Right. Yep.
I mean, the show pig industry truly provides opportunities for kids and adults alike.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the kids are learning life lessons. The adults get to get their fix with swine production because of this industry. And I feel like that we've got something very sustainable. We have something very vibrant. And I just hope that collectively as an industry, we're doing enough to make sure that we keep it. That showing pigs and doing what we're doing here in Des Moines is a privilege. It's not a right.
Right.
Yeah.
We don't have a constitutional right to do this. And this is a privilege for our kids and our families and those of us that are breeders to do. I feel very privileged to have the opportunity to make a living selling show pigs.
Mm-hmm.
10 years ago, I never dreamed that we'd get to do what we do today. And it's amazing to me that lots of us are afforded those opportunities because of this industry. And yet I worry. I mean, I lay awake at night worrying about where we're going as an industry relative to the pressures that we face from those in the commercial industry. And I mean, don't be fooled. The commercial folks, they're very determined to make sure that they continue to operate as is.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm okay with that as long as we understand what they expect out of us so that we can continue to operate, that we can continue to gather and have shows. Because if we don't have shows, we've got a very difficult industry to navigate.
Yeah,
without show pig shows. So I'm very passionate about that. I'm very determined to make sure that this is something that my kids and their kids still have an opportunity to do someday. And I think collectively as an industry, we've got to work together to make sure that this opportunity exists for the next generation.
Absolutely.
Yep.
Well, folks, this has been an incredible episode, and this is the man sitting across the table is one that I respect incredibly in terms of the thoughts and the innovation he's bringing to the industry. So, Jesse, thanks for joining us today. This has been one where a lot of people have been asking about, and we're we're very happy to have the opportunity to do this, especially with you on the show. So we appreciate you coming in.
Thanks, guys.
For those of you who heard it a couple times, Voices Heard was aired maybe a few weeks ago, depending on when we aired this. But this will air the Wednesday after Expo, the Voices Heard episode I'm talking about. So make
sure
episode
21.
Yes, episode 21 is the Voices Heard. Make sure you go and hear about what that is, and go back if you haven't heard it yet. Search there on social media. I'm sure they're out there. But that is what our industry is about. You know, make sure you're in the know as far as that goes.
Absolutely, guys. Thanks for listening to us. Keep following along on social media: Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat, and Twitter at Stock Talk Pod. We're getting better at Twitter, I think.
We're getting there.
We're trying to. Send us some messages. Keep those topics coming in. Join us as we continue on this fun journey.
That's right. Well, thanks, guys, for listening. This has been another edition of Stock Talk.